Democracy. Mr. Byfield is also a columnist for the Calgary Sun. Last November, he was also a candidate in Alberta's Senate elections. He won. So welcome to the commentary.ca, Link Byfield. Good morning, Senator in waiting, Byfield.
Thank you, Joseph.
I want to ask you about the Senate elections, because they are extraordinary in the Canadian sense that Alberta is the only province that holds those. How does it look to you? Do you think that Prime Minister Martin will appoint any one of you eventually? Or?
Hard to say. It certainly doesn't seem likely, but you don't want to say that it's too unlikely, because we don't actually know which direction this government's going in, this federal government. It's a weak minority. It's a weakly led minority, so you never quite know. But I put it this way, I'm not holding my breath. I'm not quitting my day job.
Right.
Our approach on it will be to try and get other provinces to elect them too, because I think if three or four provinces actually started electing senators, then the thing would move. The feds would actually have very little choice. It's ridiculous when you think about it that we don't elect our members of parliament. People don't think of senators as MPs, but they are members of parliament. They're the members of the upper house. It's a very powerful house if it's elected.
Right.
And so that's, we're trying to get people sort of thinking in these terms. And if, say Nova Scotia or Newfoundland or Saskatchewan or BC decided to start doing it too, how many provinces can the Liberals ignore? I don't know.
Do you think that this is just an Alberta phenomenon? Is there interest for an elected Senate in other parts of the country, like Nova Scotia, like British Columbia, like Quebec?
Several provinces have expressed genuine interest, Nova Scotia being one, New Brunswick another. I think Newfoundland these days is actually feeling a bit sore about the way the Federation works. Now, it's true they won their point, but, they realize it's just they're vulnerable until, as soon as the next one comes along. And I think especially in the Atlantic, there are a number of provinces which are actually within a hair's breadth of doing it. The other thing that we're arguing or we're presenting the other premiers with, we've actually just gotten underway with this, one of the other senators and I, senators-elect, rather. We're pointing out that if they don't start electing senators, Ottawa will start electing senators under federal party rules and federal party systems, so that the senators in the upper house are under the same direction as the MPs in the lower house from the same party leaders.
And that's not how the Senate was originally composed by the Fathers of Confederation to be a federal institution, rather a provincial one, right?
Well, not quite. No, that's actually a bit of an oversimplification. The logic was they called it sections of the country, and they meant the West, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic were to have an equal voice in the Senate. They didn't go to provincial equality in 1867. I personally can live with regional equality. I don't think we may never see provincial equality. I don't think it's in our tradition. And so it may not be obtainable from the bigger provinces. But when you actually work out the numbers, you don't really need it. At least you don't need it right away, and you may never get it. The main thing is to get the Senate away from the control of the Prime Minister. That's the main thing. And the only way you can do that is elect it from provincial parties using candidates who reply in the end, who are answerable in the end through the provincial parties, the provincial premiers and opposition leaders, to the provincial electorate. That's the only way that you can get it away from the Prime Minister.
So that's one of the things, the Senate reform, that the Citizen Center for Freedom and Democracy is working on. The other thing that we've been reading about is a campaign for a same-sex referendum. Can you talk to us about that and what exactly that entails and what you plan to do?
Yes, cheerfully. What we're advocating is that the whole question of same-sex marriage, before it goes through Parliament, be put to a national referendum to advise Parliament. You can't bind Parliament with a referendum under the Canadian system, not legally and constitutionally, but you can sort of compel them politically to move in a certain direction, simply, by having a national vote. At this point, none of the federal parties has endorsed the idea of a referendum on same-sex marriage as this bill gets presented to Parliament. But I think that they will change. This bill is not going to go through quickly. That seems quite plain. And the longer it hangs up, the more either the Liberals or the Conservatives or both are going to realize that we're in a kind of a box on this. We've walked into a blind alley. We can't get out. We need an escape route. And, of course, as soon as they hand it to the people, you know, in a referendum, even if it's not supposedly binding, the way Charlottetown was not actually binding, but guess what? Politically, it's actually pretty persuasive.
Right.
You know, I think the longer it hangs up in Parliament, this bill, the more prone either the Liberals or the Tories or both will be to put it to the to take advice from the people. You know, we've heard from the courts. Now we want to hear from the people, and then Parliament will decide as it as is appropriate. And I think they'll side with the people, whichever way the people go. If the people go against what the courts have done on gay marriage, I suspect Parliament tips to the people because the people are the ones who elect.
I've looked this up on the internet. A fellow by the name of Jim Hughes. He's national president of the Campaign Life Coalition, and he was responding to a column that you wrote back. I believe it was Christmas Eve about having a referendum on same-sex marriage.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I know Jim fairly well, actually.
And he said that the problem with wanting a referendum is that one could conceivably say, well, we could have a referendum to introduce slavery or public stoning. How do you respond to that?
I think it's a very silly point, with all due respect to Jim Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, you can always, you know, you can say, well, we can't have a gas well in this particular part of the country because there's a 1 in a million chance it might blow up. You know, or you could say, well, if we all lived on Mars, then such and such would happen. Like, there is, I don't know anybody anywhere, certainly in North America, that advocates slavery. You know, what Jim is actually arguing against is democracy, whether it's through the form of representative democracy in Parliament or direct democracy. It's actually a question of policy, of judgment. It's not a question of principle. If the people, if we believe in government by consent of the governed, Jim's point is just foolish. And I've heard it made by others than him, but I'm not sure how they explain the election of MPs then.
Justice Minister Erwin Kodler said that a referendum would be silly in that one would never subject minority rights to the power of the majority. How do you, what do you think of that assertion from the Justice Minister?
I don't like to sound disrespectful about anybody, but I think this is another ridiculous point. It's one of these things that left liberal people have taught us to say. It's actually historically untrue, and it's legally incoherent. Majorities have always disposed of minority rights, always in the democratic tradition. That's what democracy does. It says, okay, we'll have a law, and because we're persuaded that, you know, women should vote, we will then enact that. But the people who enacted it were a majority government enfranchised entirely by males. You know, they decide, okay, well, we should give women the vote, too, because it makes sense. It's good for the country. It's fair. You know, that's how the process always worked and still works. That's why the Charter of Rights leaves Parliament in charge of judicial decisions that affect group and individual rights. You know, that's Section 33, and it was put there for a reason. And even Trudeau, who didn't really want it there, acknowledged by the end of the process that it was, in fact, the Canadian tradition of responsible government, that the people elect the government and the government accounts to the people. You know, just before Christmas, Paul Martin said an amazing thing. I often wonder if he has actually thought much about Canadian constitutional law. But he said, you know, the judges have spoken on the gay marriage issue, and now it's time for parliamentarians to fulfill their responsibility. And I thought, who on earth does he think he's responsible to? The judges? No, under our tradition, even, you know, before the Charter and since, he is responsible to the people of the country. They elect him. And so that's, you know, whether you look at the Charter of Rights being implemented by majority governments or the Human Rights Acts of the 60s and 70s, majority governments, you know, the women's right to vote, majority governments, it's always, what Kodler's saying is just incoherent, to put a polite word to it.
There was a story in the National Post on Monday the 7th saying that powerful religious groups are sending money and support to their allies in Canada to fight same-sex marriage. Is the referendum campaign that the Citizens Center is working on, is that a neutral campaign? Jimmy, you don't take a position on same-sex marriage, do you?
Actually, we don't.
Okay.
As an organization. We're not a conservative organization. And we don't have a position on same-sex marriage. I mean, as individuals, we probably, you know, I'm sure we do, but
right.
As an organization, we, and many of our supporters, we've actually sent 22,000, through our site, 22,000 Canadians have sent emails to Paul Martin asking for a referendum.
Really?
And we're now putting billboards up across the country asking the same thing. And a lot of those supporters, a lot of those people who are supporting this campaign are actually in favor of gay marriage. I think the larger number are probably against it, but it strikes me it's actually similar to the opinion polls, which are now showing sort of 2-1 against gay marriage. But I would support a referendum on gay marriage, even if the other side was going to win. You know, like I don't think we're that interested in which side wins. What we're interested in is, you know, Parliament has heard from the courts. It has to make a decision. Surely it should consult the people. And then it can decide, you know, well, you know, on the one hand this, on the other hand that, you know, if the people end up going against the courts, if they don't, well, then Parliament has no problem at all. But if they do, as there's a good chance they might, then Parliament's job is to decide, well, okay, in our judgment, the judges have a point here, but the people seem to have a point there, because they'll watch the debate unfold. It'll be quite public. And it will be a realistic result, a realistic taking of the pulse of the people on it. We saw this with Charlottetown, and I was actually just blown away at how seriously people took the process. As soon as you give them a vote, they take it seriously on a specific issue like this. And if you don't give them a vote or some reasonably decisive influence in the process, then they don't have an opinion about it. Like, why would they waste their time? Nobody's going to ask them anyway.
Let's bridge into current events in Ottawa. About the same-sex marriage vote, you don't think that the MPs are... I mean, Mr. Martin and Mr. Harper say that this is a free vote, notwithstanding cabinet ministers.
Well, and the NDP.
That's true. So
we're now up at least to 20% of the House of Commons is under a whipped vote, and you can effectively double the size of the cabinet, because even though, as I understand it, parliamentary secretaries are not being whipped, they all want to be cabinet ministers, so you know, effectively they are whipped.
Right.
And so it's not a free vote. That's just silly. And I'm not sure it should be particularly. I like free votes, but I'm not sure what the word means. How free is free?
That's
we
very
never
true.
Know.
That's very true. What do you make of the prime ministerial appearance of Chrétien yesterday and Martin tomorrow in front of the Gomery Inquiry Commission or whatever they're calling it? Do you think that Canadians care about what goes on there, or is it just a waste of public funds?
I don't think it's a waste of money at all. I've seen in the Globe people are saying, well, and elsewhere people are saying, you know, it's really, I think, the Chrétien camp are saying, you know, this costs so much. Well, yeah, the Mounties cost a lot of money. You know, does that mean we don't have a police force? I mean, the fact is a crime was probably committed here. That seems fairly clear. The only doubt is as to who committed it. You know, approximately, according to the, you know, earlier investigations by people like the Auditor General, it looks like of the $250 million, $100 million can't be accounted for in any productive way. You know, it was basically, from what we can tell, stolen. And so even if it costs $200 million to find out who stole the $100 million, I don't care. And I don't think most people do. I think they want to know who stole that money and how much did they take and what happened to it. Because I think that this whole sort of attitude among, I think it's particularly strong within the sort of upper echelons of the National Liberal Party, is basically the country exists for the benefit of the party, not the party for the benefit of the country. They never say that in public, but they seem to act like that. And I think that this inquiry is the first step in perhaps rooting some of that out. It's a very ignoble fate for a truly great national party to come to this, to become so corrupt. And it plainly is. I mean, just based on the way they were behaving. I'm not saying all liberals are corrupt. That would be a foolish statement. It wouldn't be true. But obviously near the top of the system, especially in Quebec, but I suspect elsewhere as well, there's tremendous corruption going on, and it should be rooted out.
I talked to Sinclair Stevens just before I began our conversation today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he's part of this new entity called the Progressive Canadian Party. And I guess, and we, I mean, put both of you in a room, you both agree that the Liberal Party is probably not the party that you would select.
Right.
What then is the alternative? Is it, to him, Stephen Harper and the Conservatives are not. How do you look at that? Do you think that Stephen Harper and the Conservative Party as it is now would make a good alternative to the governing Liberals?
I try to avoid expressing partisan political opinions too much. I mean, if it speaks to directly to an issue like corruption, then obviously you kind of have to if you're going to talk about that issue. But in terms of general party preferences, I try to stay away from that because many of our supporters are, in fact, liberals. And, you know, my own, like when I ran for the Senate, I ran as an independent for this very reason, that I don't want to be seen as partisan. And so I'd really rather not comment on that if you'll allow me to escape it.
Right.
A sort of a valid distinction now that has, like, I think Harper has done a good job with the Conservative Party. You know, whether I support it or I don't, I think it's now a Conservative Party more than it was. This idea of a progressiveness is, to my mind, something of a quicksand trap that, you know, once you're on the treadmill, you never get off it. And in fact, that's what's happened to the Liberals. The whole sort of paradigm of endless progression, you know, towards newer and newer things, which, you know, must continue. It's almost a Marxist idea that we're fated to endless progress in a particular direction, and the direction always seems to be from less state control to more state control. It just seems to go on, and even when it gets checked economically, then it just builds socially. So I'm not sure Sink and I would likely agree with that. I don't know if that's where his new party's headed, but if he's bought into the progressive paradigm, I'm not sure I'd want to be part of it.
So do you think that, I mean, as a voter, one wonders, you know, what to do. I mean, the Liberals have been in power for 12 years, and as he agreed, that change is probably a necessity eventually. I would have thought 4 years ago. Do we just hope then that another party is in the offing that can take this place, or do we just hope that the Liberals fix themselves and that the corruption, the rot that we saw with the sponsorship scandal, never happens again?
I'm not sure. The tradition of parliamentary democracy is to switch back and forth. And you don't necessarily want to bring in a revolution, a kind of political, ideological, social revolution every time you change parties. The parliamentary tradition doesn't work well with social revolutions. That's been part of the big problem, I think, for the last 30 or 40 years, is that there has been a social revolution, and both of the parties had a very hard time coping with it, and that revolution continues. Where the Citizen Center goes with this stuff is to say we believe in responsible government, which is a term that actually predates Confederation in Canada. It just means an accountable government, a government accountable to the people, a democratic government. And it has a particular a context, kind of. It's got to be constitutional, it's got to be honest. And so that's what we advocate. I think the Conservatives can give responsible government. They've proven that over many years. And I think the Liberals can, if they would just shape up a little bit. The new wrinkle since the Charter, of course, is that to have a truly responsible government, you have to have a democratic counterbalance on the courts. The courts never used to have any much influence on Parliament. They didn't try to. Since the Charter came in 1982, the courts have become very, very powerful on social policy, on political issues, and yet they don't account to anybody for it. And so our approach at the Citizen Center is to say, well, if we're going to stay with the idea of responsible government that goes way, way back to the Upper and Lower Canada rebellions in the 1830s, you know, if we want to continue in this tremendous tradition, we have to find some way of counterbalancing the courts, not with a view to making the people sovereign. In our theory, they're not. You know, in Canadian tradition, the crown is sovereign, not the people, really. But you have to have a kind of counterbalance to the courts somehow, and so far Parliament hasn't been able to figure one out.
You talked about the 22,000 emails that have been sent through the Citizen Center website.
Yeah.
Would you give us the address? I'm sure people listening to us would appreciate getting that URL.
It's pretty easy to remember. It's marriagereferendum.ca.
Marriagereferendum.ca.
You open it up, and there's the letter. You just follow the prompts, and it's easy to do. And And then, you know, we keep people up to date on the issue, just send around, you know, periodic bulletins and stuff. If they want them, they just tell us if they want those things.
And the Citizen Center website, their actual website for the other things like Senate reform, that is what?
That actually, marriagereferendum.ca actually takes you straight into the Citizen Center website.
Oh, there you go.
That's so, all right there.
So marriagereferendum.ca. Link Byfield, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me and my audience about these prescient Canadian issues.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Joseph. Thank you very much.
For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plenum.